AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Ayo, DJ.
What's up?
Spin that shh.
1, 2, 3.
Game 7 is tonight. Thanks to the assassin from Okayama, Japan, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, and the heroics of Kike Hernandez, Miguel Rojas, Tyler Glasnow, Will Smith, and Marcus Lynn Betts. Dodgers take Game 6 in the 6, giving us the two best words in professional sports. Game 7 tonight with Shohei Ohtani on the mound. Absolute cinema, Brandon. We're back. It's Deferred Collusion. Wow. It's me, Jesse Rowe, the King of Crespi, joined as always by Brandon Bollinger, Lord Paramount of the South Bay in Los Angeles, California. Brandon, we got Game 7 tonight. Game 6 was a wild one. How you feeling, brother?
I am emotionally unwell, but boy, am I glad to be here. Jesse, Game 7. Who would have thought it was possible? Nobody was thinking that these bums, these Dodgers, had any fight left. They were saying Mookie's past his prime. They were saying this pitching staff is cooked. And they were saying that there is no way that Yamamoto can be as successful as he was a second time against this formidable Jays offense. Well, there was some truth to that. But killer's gonna kill, dude. Great White only knows how to eat. Am I right, Jess?
Absolutely.
And that's what we saw from our ace, Yoshi Yamamoto. You heard it here. Pfft, boy, did he dominate. Just for some reason, I guess felt like he had to pay back George Springer for hitting him earlier in the series and let him get that 3-0 meatball that led to a single or whatever that count was. It was nasty. I think I speak for all Dodger fans everywhere where you just say you don't want to see Springer have any success. But hey, tip of the cap. He had a couple of hits against our
and playing through some like pretty. Well, it did to me. It looked like he was a little hurt. Like he was wincing a lot of swings. Maybe I don't know. Maybe he was playing it up a little bit.
Jesse, you know where I stand on this. I'm calling it pure cinema. It's a little bit of an actor's eye, if you will. You know, Jess, I've grown up working in Hollywood. Oh, I'm not kidding.
Okay.
You grew up working in Hollywood. You've seen some of these Hollywood elites and the way they can turn
Blue
it on
Jay
and off.
Blue Jay fans are gonna rip us if
I don't care, dude. I'm calling it like I see it. This is '08 all over again. This is Paul Pierce in the wheelchair.
Oh, wow. Okay.
This is George Springer's best attempts to Alex Cora it up, get his guys all fired up, you know. Oh, rally behind the old wise vet. He's got a oblique injury because you can't see it, right? How convenient. Get out of here, George. You've lied to us once. You're lying to us again. You're not hurt, dude. It's a work. In wrestling terms, it's a work, all right?
All right. Well, look, out of just respect for competition, the fact that he was out for two games and they did pull him in the middle of a tied game in game three.
It's all cinema.
I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I do think here's the thing. Like, it's not a serious oblique injury. Otherwise, he would not be playing.
People saying there are conspiracies. MLB trash talkers were just having a rough one last night. And
guy Ricardo, who runs that account, like I think he was having some beers last night. He, like Dodgers live rent free in that guy's head.
And that was crazy.
He was having a rough time. Like the Dodgers scored two runs and three runs and he's all of a sudden like he is like it's rigged. The league couldn't let the Dodgers lose. It was fucking crazy, man. Like
it's crazy
talk.
Like these guys aren't out there actually competing. This is all just a fix. Like, come on, man. Chauncey Billups isn't here.
How was an RBI single by Mookie after a double by Will Smith? Like, how is that rigging? Like, the game? What are you talking about, dude?
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't know if he was watching the same game. Yeah. I don't know if he was watching the same game I was watching, but Blue Jays pitching were carving the Dodgers up.
Yeah,
dude.
We're gonna get to that. We're gonna get to all that. But yeah, just the idea of this being like fixed or rigged when the Dodgers are swinging the bats horribly in this series is just patently absurd. Anyways, we're gonna get to Yamamoto. We're gonna get.
Sounds
to the
like
offense.
Somebody had put some money on that game and was maybe worried they would never be able to financially recover.
Had a few beers, put some money on the game, and
maybe a nose beer or two.
Very likely crashing out on the internet. 30-year-old man.
Don't say that. You're too old.
All right, that's fair. Six, 6-7. All right, let's go.
Se siente.
Yeah,
that's Spanish.
Let's go to the story of the game is the ninth is the ninth inning here. We'll get to everything else. Oh my god, man. I mean, I'm fucking like. It's embarrassing. I saw a kid behind home plate, by the way, who was doing like a Canadian kid who was like doing this the whole time.
That's funny. I think it's funny, dude. I don't care. I used to say Mike Jones. It's nothing. It just means I used to say Mike Jones all the time, dude.
Well,
so
we
whatever.
Have other reasons for that, but yeah. All right. Let's go. For anybody who doesn't know, we knew a guy named Mike Jones.
Homie, shouts out Mike.
Shout out Mike Jones. St. Louis,
killing
baby.
It. Comedian crushing it, dude.
Yep.
My boy.
So the real story of this game, you know, we're going to get to Yama and the offense and everything and Mookie, but it's the ninth inning is really where this game just kind of took some steroids. I mean, this game got fucking wild at the end. Roki comes in for his second inning of relief in the bottom of the ninth inning, had an 0-2 count. To start the inning against Alejandro Kirk. And sorry, what were you going to say?
I was just going to ask, before we even get into that account, what did you think about Roki coming out for a second inning?
So that's what I'm going to get to with the strategy of the game here, because I thought it was a weird decision to have him go two, only because I thought that they could have extended Yama. You know, he was only at 96 pitches through six. I thought that they could have extended him to like 120 if they wanted to, like the season on the line, he's your best pitcher. But I think that they clearly felt like it was the right call, but we'll get to it. Cause they put in Robleski in the seventh, which led to needing Roki for two innings, which is why I thought extending Yama made a little bit more sense, but we'll get to that.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to ask just like when you saw Roki come out for that ninth after completing the eighth, like just a gut feeling was bad, right? Because like that's how I felt. I was like, oh man, I really just want Roki to not have to sit down and come back out. And I feel like that's kind of been the thing, right? Like, I don't know, just gut feeling was all I was curious. My bad, brother.
Comes down to trust, right? Like that there's just not a lot of guys to trust here, and Roki is one of the guys, and I understand why, but also you're exposing him a lot, and this is in Toronto, a lot of pressure on the kid to go two innings in this situation. I want to keep his confidence as high as possible, you know, and that's why I got a little scared. I guess what's the ultimate confidence boost is like trusting him to go two innings, right?
Right.
Which unfortunately he could not do. So he starts the inning 0-2 to Kirk, and this is in the bottom of the ninth, and he ends up hitting Kirk with a splitter that came inside. Similarly, in an at-bat earlier in the game, Yamamoto had Kirk 2-2 and almost hit him with a splitter that Kirk actually swung at. So I don't hate the splitter inside, but you have to be able to control it, because that's where the inning kind of – the wheels you could see was like, oh, no. Oh no! Like you could feel it. You could feel it in that moment. Like this is not good.
Yeah, felt like the pin had been pulled in the grenade, if you will. And it was like, oh, this is armed and ready to go off. And then,
100%. Next batter, Addison Barger has an awesome at bat. I think it was 3-2 or 2-2. I forget what it was. Roki, 98 mph, top of the zone fastball. Not a bad pitch, but this is where exposing a guy too much.
Yeah,
this can happen. And Barger hits a fucking missile to center field.
Roped it.
That gets stuck in the bottom of the wall, at the base of the wall. And you know, everybody's giving Justin Dean credit because Justin Dean threw his hands up as he's at the wall, like, hey, the ball is stuck. That's a dead ball. It's actually Kike who gets the credit here because Dean was, like, looking back to see who he was going to throw to when he was going to pick up the ball. And then Kike is the one who's saying, no, dead ball, stop, stop, stop. And that's when Dean threw his arms up. And I know everybody's, because he did an interview after the game saying that he's known that rule for a long time and that he was aware of it. I think the credit goes to Kike here because if you rewatch it, it's Kike telling him, do not touch that ball. And then immediately the umpires called it a dead ball. But man, for a second there as I'm watching it, I thought it was a game tying inside the park home run. I didn't think that the umpires were going to give it a dead ball. Like I was losing my mind. I was screaming at the TV like, Justin Dean, what are you doing? Like I went to a full octave higher.
I was right there with you, but I could hear Joe Davis saying that they're calling it a dead ball.
I couldn't hear it. We were all screaming in the garage. I couldn't hear it.
So I'm hearing that, but I'm seeing the guy still run. So I didn't know. I'm like, is there a confusion? Is one blue calling it, you know, dead? And somebody else is saying it's live. And it's one of those tricky things that, you know, everybody loves the little quirks of and dimensions and nooks and crannies of a ballpark until something like this happens, right? You know, you expect to maybe see this in like a Wrigley or a Fenway or something like that, but you don't expect to see it at the Rogers Center.
Renovated field, by the way.
A renovated field, but you can see that there was a noticeable gap underneath that padding, and that ball, like you said, was roped. And it never rattled once. You know, it didn't roll into that spot. It lodged in there. And I think that was the reason why it just was immediate hands up. That ball did not move an iota after it landed. So I think it kind of took the decision out of the ump's hands. And don't get me wrong, I heard plenty of Blue Jays fans after the game in front of the stadium, online, whatever, going off about it. And
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
I would be doing the same too, but I do understand the rule. It isn't the first time I've seen something like this. And it's just one of those weird quirks of baseball. And it's just such an odd, weird play. But boy.
It's a clear rule. But it's a weird one because if Dean plays the ball, it becomes a live ball. So heads up by Kike and Dean there to do it. But like, it's also a risk because you never know. It's up to the umpire's discretion. I don't know if that's a reviewable play. I haven't actually looked that up. I'm not sure if it's reviewable or not. I don't know. Like, that's such a rare occurrence when that happens. Especially with the stakes on the line, like that, what a huge decision there for the umpires to get it right. But you know, Blue Jay fans complaining, saying, "Oh, it's fixed, it's rigged." I mean, dude, like if that ball just hits the wall normally, it's such a weird timing thing. Like, it was perfectly placed, where if it's like an inch higher, it's just gonna go off the wall and bounce back. Like, yeah, maybe you score a run, but it's still runner on second. Nobody out, and then, you know, they brought Glasnow in, which we're going to get to. So I don't know if the result was affected that much other than letting them score an inside the park home run. You know what I mean? Like, that's the only way that this affects the game, because the way it played out was not the way Blue Jays fans are like envisioning it would have happened, right? They're basically saying, no, you have to let us have an inside the park home run. But it's like, dude, the ball got stuck in the wall. Whether or not he could have grabbed it out immediately or not is like, that's on your stadium design. That's not the fault of the Dodgers.
And Jesse, I just say, it is pretty crazy for a team that just paid a player $500 million, offered Shohei $700 million, to not just have another inch and a quarter of padding around the bottom of their fence. Like, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah, there has to be some sealant of some kind, something that you can put in the bottom that protects that.
Well, my assumption is that they take that fence down when they have events and stuff like that, so there's a reason why it doesn't go all the way to the bottom. It probably is just like, whatever, it's a little bit of a gap so that you can manipulate it and put it on and off. And
I think you can create like panels, like 3D print panels or whatever, that can seal into the bottom that prevent that sort of thing. But I mean, you know, whatever. Either way, it was called a double. It was called a ground rule double, and only second and third.
You know, still that, though, it's second and third, no outs. You know what I mean?
And a team and on the verge of another Joe Carter moment, going to win the World Series. You know, so
one swing away, one pitch away at that point with the batter on deck. You know, with Springer up,
Springer was looming like in this game, and we're going to get to that part
because it was the eight hole hitter comes up.
It was Clement in the eight hole.
That's right,
and the Dodgers go to Tyler Glasnow, who started warming up in the bullpen to start the inning.
And let's just talk about how that feels before we get into it. Like, you know, I asked you your gut feeling about Roky coming out to do the second. Did not sit well, right? So when we see Glasnow warming up.
I had a bad feeling from the beginning about Roky doing two innings.
Yeah, absolutely. So now we see Glasnow in the bullpen before he obviously gets announced that he's coming out. What is your gut feeling when you see Glass?
Because
I believe we texted each other.
To be 100% honest with you, I texted you. I don't know if I texted you this. I texted another buddy this. I said, get Glasnow in right fucking now.
Mm.
Like, as soon as I saw Glasnow in, I thought we were going to win the game. Because I was really worried that we were going to try to extend Roky. Once we put in Glasnow, I started to feel better. But I was, you know, still obviously like panicking. I'm shitting my pants.
Oh, yeah.
But I felt much better about the situation because I knew that he had a better chance of getting a strikeout than Roky did in that spot. That was just my gut. Coming up against with Jimenez and Clement coming up, I thought those are your two best chances to get a strikeout.
Yeah.
Obviously, that didn't happen. But, you know, Clement is a very, very aggressive hitter. He's known for swinging at the first pitch. Glasnow comes in, 96 mile an hour knuckle buster, you know, first pitch, like up and in, absolutely jams the shit out of
him. Yeah, dude.
It could not have been a more perfect start to Glasnow's appearance because it was just a little flare to Freddie, and it was all of a sudden one out, second and third, and that's when I started.
That was the first exhale of the inning, definitely. Yeah. It was the first time.
Here. Yeah.
Yeah, now we're like, okay, we can trade the out for the run. Let's strand the guy at second. You know, we can get a strikeout. You know, we got two out, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So at that point, one out, that beautiful little first pitch pop out, and you're thinking, okay, there's a little framework here. We got an opportunity to maybe salvage this.
And I'm thinking, like, Jimenez is an amazing defender. He's had some big hits in the postseason, but I'll take Andrés Giménez in that spot any day of the week.
Yes.
In terms of everybody on the Blue Jays lineup, I think that's the guy I would want to face the most, just because he's a pretty light hitting guy. He's hitting nine for a reason in that lineup, and
you know, not as much experience as an IKF, even though he's been like a pretty abysmal spot in their lineup.
Yeah, IKF would be the next best option, basically, but yeah. So it's second and third, one out, and then Glasnow goes 1-0, and next pitch is a 97 on the corner, and Jimenez flares it into left. And if you go back and you watch, you see the expanded outfield, like the expanded view of the outfield.
Yes.
The right field and center field are playing fairly deep.
Yeah.
Kike was playing very shallow, so they clearly did not respect Jimenez's power going to left field. Excuse me. And that was massive on this play, like massive, the way the outfield positioning here, because Kike is able to charge in on it, and you know, it looked like a flare single off the bat, potentially a tie game.
It did.
Kike caught it pretty easily on the run here. Excuse me. And I didn't see it right off the bat, but Barger was cheating like halfway to third, basically thinking it was going to drop, obviously. He thought the same thing we did. Probably wasn't aware of where Kike was in the outfield. The ball stayed up just long enough. Kike catches it, and then his momentum is carrying him into second. And he was explaining this in the postgame, that he tries to basically take something off the throw to get Barger because he didn't want to overthrow, basically.
Yeah, you can see it in his posture. Yeah. He's kind of more upright.
He kind of just flicked it.
He's not getting his body behind it, and it's just letting his momentum, and it's, like you said, a flick. And that ball is humming to Miguel Rojas at second base.
It ate up Rojas. It was a really tough hop for Rojas.
Yeah, it was like very nasty.
And Miguel Rojas, man, just with the pick of his life at second base. I was worried Barger was safe at first for a second. I wasn't sure, but he makes the pick. Doubles up Barger at second base. Game over. We go to game seven. And it was one of those, I jumped up and just let out a completely incomprehensible scream from my voice. Like, I don't even
guttural.
Know what sound I don't know what
guttural.
Sound I made. It
yeah.
was like, it was
animalistic.
Like one of those, you know, like I couldn't believe it. It was
my
like
a little gobble gobbler.
It felt like.
Yeah, it was gross. I'm sorry, dude.
It's okay. Thanksgiving's coming up, dude.
Hey,
it felt like we got away with one. You know what I mean? That's what it felt like, and it was such a good feeling.
Jesse, I love that. It was something I was thinking about you, and not in like a jerky way, but like we had talked before the game, and we were questioning whether or not Rojas starting the game was a good call. Yeah. And you were like, you know, why not Kim? And we were both kind of talking about that live bat, high contact guy, a lot of speed. But as we started sitting there, after we had talked, I'm like, you know what, though? There is no, you know, substitute for experience. And Rojas is a guy that has been in battles, has gotten gold glove votes at shortstop, you know, has really put in the work to try and be a mentor over the years in LA.
Steady
really
president.
Is appreciated. Yeah, and has really appreciated his role playing behind Clayton Kershaw. And, you know, so really has like a reverence for this team and being able to play any role at a high level, you know, has actually done a ton of work with Mookie behind the scenes at getting him better at a defensive shortstop. And we've seen the dividends that's played, right? So to get that experience at the dish, I think he had some like pretty long ABs throughout the game. I don't think all of them were, but saw some pitches, and to have these stellar, I mean, when I say stellar, these are like plays that should be studied over there at second base. Yeah. That hop was so filthy. He's catching it like in between like his legs almost, and Barger's coming in, and it's, you know, the World Series, dude. Your team just had a man on second and third, no outs, and you're somehow finding yourself in this split second position.
Right.
To walk this team off at home to force a game seven. I mean, talk about Mamba mentality, just ice cold fucking water running through your veins in that moment. It's just, again, Jesse, like I was saying, there's no excuse, or excuse me, no substitute for experience.
Yeah.
And Barger playing off the base a little too far, being excited, high energy, you know, expecting to score on contact and not playing the situation is a little bit of that lack of experience
and
coming home to roost, if you will.
And George Springer is on deck. So if you just don't get doubled up there, you got one of the greatest playoff performers of all time looming in the on deck circle with a chance to potentially have a Kirk Gibson / Joe Carter moment. You could see Springer after on the wide view, he like dropped to his knees, like put his hand in his head, like, oh my God, how do I not get this opportunity here? Because there was no way they were going to pitch Glasnow to Nathan Lukes. Like, it was going to be Springer in that spot. You know, and to the point about Rojas, it felt like it was like starting him in this game was kind of a reward for being a steady presence and just being the ultimate team sacrifice guy, like sort of setting the tone for like what it takes to be a good team player, be a good teammate. And you kind of gave him that opportunity there, and his at bats were fine. He you know, he didn't do anything at the plate. I think he struck out on a pitch that was below the zone, should have been called a ball.
Yeah,
but, you know, it was
there's a few of those last night.
he made, yeah, there, dude, there was an umpire report that there was like 7 missed calls in this game. They mostly favored the Blue Jays, and that it was actually plus 1.05 runs for the Blue Jays.
Wow. That's obviously the MLB trying to force a game 7. Exactly. That's, I mean, yeah. Somebody tell my boys Ricardo, dude.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was clearly like it was not that like the umpire was biased towards the Blue Jays, but that's what the result of it was.
Totally.
Like his calls favored the Blue Jays. So anyways, Rojas made other big plays in this game, as you mentioned. Like, he made a barehanded play on Barger mm-hmm. in like the 7th when Wroblewski was on. That was a huge play, a chopper off the plate, and he was not going to get Barger unless he barehanded it. That was the only way he was going to make the play. And also when Roki was on in the 8th, there was a pretty hard hit ball by Varsho, I forget who it was, that was fielded at 2nd by Rojas. That was like just a nice clean field. So he did everything he needed to do to prevent runs in this game from a defensive standpoint. And so he earned his spot. I think he's a lock to be in the lineup today, which we will get to. So what a game that was, what an ending it was. And that's just funny because the story was the 9th inning, but really, you know, this is all thanks to the heroics of Yoshinobu Yamamoto in this series, who goes 6 innings, 1 run, 5 hits, 1 walk, 6 Ks, against Kevin Gausman, who was dealing in this game, really just once again had 1 bad inning. Otherwise, pretty damn good by Gausman. Dodgers struck out 5 of 6 times to start the game, which was just brutal to watch. It's just like, what is going on with this offense?
It felt like the Blue Jays were stepping on our throat at that moment. Like, they're controlling the tempo of the game. We're having these 3 up, 3 downs. Yama's having to come right back out. There was some pressure early on, but nothing major. He was able to get around it. No real – I think he gave up like a leadoff double in the 3rd. Pitched around it, or maybe that was, I forget.
No. Edmund got the 1-out double in 3rd. First pitch double down the right field line. And then Will Smith comes up and, gets the 2-out. Cause then Freddie struck out.
Oh no, I was speaking about Yamamoto earlier in the game. Yeah. Like, I think he gave up like a leadoff double in 1 inning, around it.
Yeah.
Gave up the 1 run, but yeah, otherwise, really was cruising. Pitch count, I think when he was pulled, was it? What'd you say it was at?
96. I thought that 96 we were going to extend him to like 120 pitches, just because of the lack of faith in the bullpen, and to get him through 7, I felt like was a lock. But it seems like Doc might have actually learned from games 4 and 5, because that's sort of what he was trying to do by extending the outings of Otani and Snell in games 4 and 5. He was trying to figure out a way to get them through 7, and in this game he decided, well, it hasn't worked with Banda. He clearly likes the idea of like going to a lefty, but going to Henriquez mm-hmm. didn't work, so we went with Wroblewski. And I do want to talk about him a bit, but I want to go back. The 3rd inning, it was just massive, because Edmund, you know, we need him to do something, especially to turn the lineup over. Somebody needs to produce to turn the lineup over. He gets a 1-out double, and ended up, I think, next, Rojas struck out. Shohei gets intentionally walked, and then Will Smith just has, you know, does what he's been doing all postseason mm-hmm. long, and just got the Dodgers the big hit they needed.
Oh, yeah.
Had a beautiful double down the line. I thought Shohei might have been able to score on it, but he wasn't able to, but it did not matter, because Marcus Lynn Betts finally has a moment, and gets a bases-loaded single after Freddie walks, and you could just see the collective sigh of relief from the entire team.
The weight of the world fell off his shoulders in that moment. You could see almost like a look of disbelief on his face at first base.
Yeah.
And it was really awesome to kind of hear him get that love in the post game after sitting with A-Rod and Jeter and Big Poppy. Poppy was just giving him his flowers and, you know, really, you know, singing his praises. And Jeter had a really cool moment where he stopped Mookie when he was kind of being a little self-deprecating, you know, like, hey, I've been, you know, not good for the team. I haven't had a good year. So, you know, just to get to show up for the boys and do something positive, you know, felt really good. And Jeter stops him and goes, no, man, like, you've been great. You've played an exceptional defensive shortstop.
Yeah.
So don't say you haven't, this hasn't been a good year. It's been a great year. And you know what, man? It's reminiscent of that 2024 postseason run where Mookie had just like maybe the most unluckiest start to a postseason you've ever seen somebody have. You know, I mentioned it, the irrelevant one, Jurickson Profar, Robin M. You know, some people calling it the most embarrassed Mookie's ever been on a baseball field. Turns it around. Well, in the biggest at bat of the season, with, you know, the year on the line, Mookie delivers. And
yeah.
It's just a testament to that guy's just stick with itness. He's trusting the process and he's going to keep battling it. I'm not going to lie, man. It's been frustrating seeing him underperform in the moment, but it reminds us that we're not even here without Mookie taking some huge walks in the division series, in the championship series, and just having that professional presence on the field. So to see him get that knock, it really feels like it meant a lot to this team as a whole.
I think it was massive even for tonight's game, just for him to feel like, absolutely, okay, he ran into one. He got some good, solid contact, too. He felt it off the bat. It was a nice, clean, perfect hit. And then he got a walk later in the game, too. He worked a really good count to get to I think he loaded the bases for Teo, or was Muncy. I forget who was hitting after Mookie.
It was Teo.
Yeah, and then Teo struck out, obviously. But
Teo's had some terrible at-bats, Teo, my goodness.
I think Teo killed the rally in the third inning, to be honest. I mean, Gausman was on the ropes. The Dodgers were starting to see him. And then Teo,
he bailed him out.
He swung at three balls. And it just, like, totally killed the momentum the Dodgers had. That was just Teo had a really, 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 really
yeah, and you can
game.
See it's a guy that's in between his swing right now, trying his best to make something happen, and he's just
but you got to be smart,
a dog looking for a bone, man. It's you got to sit back a little bit and know that, hey, man, they're gonna try and get me to extend and swing outside of the zone to negate my power, so I can't hurt them. You got to be more patient, and you know, maybe if you get beat on a fastball, well, you get beat, but you're not swinging outside of the zone by 3 feet, brother.
Can't do a good pitcher favors when he's starting to show cracks in the armor, you know?
Absolutely.
Just can't do it. Like, if I don't care if he strikes out or gets out. Like, you just got to work the count a little bit better than that, and not expand the zone.
We saw him get pulled in the seventh inning when Robleski came in for Andy Páez on a defensive substitution.
Yeah.
Pretty positive it was the seventh. So like that.
It was the eighth, I think. Because otherwise, the eighth? Okay. He would have hit, I think. Páez would have hit in this game if that was the case. I think Teo struck out in the seventh on a Sir Anthony Dominguez came in and struck him out with the bases loaded. So, and then that was it. The Dodgers, the only base runner the Dodgers got after that was, I think, Shohei's double. Maybe they got one more. I think that was it, though.
Yeah. And Jesse, real quick, I just want to give a special nod and shout out to the Blue Jays bullpen. I don't know if you noticed it. I noticed it when Sir Anthony Dominguez came out, but the whole bullpen was rocking a 51 on their ball caps in honor of Alex Vesia and his family. While we're not here to speculate, but they're going through a family emergency at this time, and Alex has not been available for the World Series.
Very classy by the Blue Jays to do that.
Yeah, and it's just a reminder that this is just a game. This is a privilege that all of these guys get to be here, and that there are things much, much bigger than baseball, the World Series, or whatever. And, you know, the Vesias are dealing with that right now. So just God bless them, and, you know, nothing but love and respect to the Blue Jays organization for that. And, you know, it's just a reminder that these are all guys. They're all guys with families and people they love. And to see one of your brothers in arms, you know, even if it's a guy you're competing against, suffering like that, you know, it just reminds us all to just look out for each other and be kind to one another.
Happen. Could happen to any one of us.
Absolutely, dude. So we love you, Vesias.
Yep. I guess the question here is, now that we're going to a game seven, Brando, if the Dodgers win tonight, is Yoshinobu Yamamoto the World Series MVP?
I think he's got to be. And if not, I think the only other guy that I would consider off the top right now is Will Smith. And let me tell you why.
Shohei, too, but yeah.
Okay, but let me tell you why. I think that Shohei and Will Smith have the same amount of RBIs in the World Series. I think they both have 5. I got to double check. Will might have 4. But Will has just done more of ABs, more ABs with runners in scoring positions that were productive. Not to mention that he caught what will now be his 8th full game, going 18 innings in game 3. So I just think his physical performance has been insane. His offensive production has been fantastic. There were some missed balls in game 5 that were just brutal to see live, which led to a run and the wheels kind of falling off. But aside from that, you know, remember he missed the end of the season pretty much with a fractured hand. Missed the first couple of series with Brandon Rorvert doing his best. But boy, Will Smith has been fantastic. I know that the odds on favorite is short. Dude, you know I can't say it. Yeah. I can't say Ben Rorvert.
Come on, dude. But you said, I think you said Brand Rorvert.
I said Brendan Rorvert.
Yeah.
What was in my coffee, dude?
I have no idea, bro. you know, and not only that, he's Will's been great, but he also had the best celebration after the Dodgers won last night. Like,
so sick. It was too much
just
fun.
Slaying the axe, bro. Yeah. Just playing the air guitar. That was sick.
It was a lot of fun. But boy, it would be all for naught if they can't close it out, dude. And they got a Hall of Fame edition battle in front of them. Max Scherzer in what could be the future, I'm saying, first ballot Hall of Famer. His last dance, his last start. This could be it. While he hasn't announced his retirement, the guy's 41. He's getting up there. Lot of miles on those tires. But boy, he's still doing it with a chance to give his team a World Series ring. And Jess, I think there has been 2 Game 7s played in the last 8 seasons, and both of them have been started by Max Scherzer.
So, oh, wow. No shit.
What goes around, comes around, goes around Justin Timberlake.
I believe the last 5 road teams have won Game 7.
Well, wow. That does sound about right.
I could be 4, I forget, but I know that it's like 4 or 5.
Wow. Yeah, I think, did Houston win at home when they beat the Phillies?
No, they won in 6 at home. And then the Nationals beat them in 7 in Houston a couple of years before.
In 19.
Yeah.
And Dodgers won in Texas. Braves won in...
Braves won in 6 in Houston. Houston's been to 4 World Series. That's crazy.
Houston beat the Phillies.
Yeah. I forget who it is.
It doesn't matter. We're talking about this World Series. Anyways.
Yeah. We're gonna see
the best of Scherzer. I'm expecting there to be some velocity, but he's a guy that we can touch up. I really hope the Dodgers can put some runs on him early. We're likely to see Trey Savage, the rookie phenom. Same with Bieber, right? So they got some high octane firepower coming out of the pen. But what really is interesting, Jess, is are we seeing Glasnow come out to start? Is it Ohtani that's going to start? How is that going to work out?
It's going to be Ohtani because I think they already announced it last night, but it's Ohtani because having him come out of relief only makes sense if you have him close the game. Because if he came out for like the 3rd, 4th, or 5th, or like fifth or 6th or something, he would have to leave the DH spot and go to the field if he were to come. That's the Ohtani rule. He can only stay the DH if he's the starter. If he comes in out of relief, then he has to be go to the field. He has to vacate the DH spot. So the Dodgers at that point would relinquish the DH spot, and then you'd have to have a pitcher hit in the game, and you don't want to do that. So I think it's a no-brainer. Have Ohtani start on 3 days rest. I think he can give you one time through the order, maybe 2. Maybe he could go – or not 2, but maybe he could go 4 or 5. And then I think you piggyback with Glasnow. So if Ohtani goes 3, you have Glasnow in the middle innings. And I do think there's a chance you're going to see Blake Snell at some point late in the game. The other options, I think Robleski has proven that he could potentially come in and get some outs if needed. You might see Will Klein.
Love that.
He's amazing that there's a chance you'll see that. But I think ideally you're just going to see starting pitchers in this game. I think that's the most likely thing. And maybe Roki.
Yeah.
And maybe, just maybe, if it's like a 6-1 game, Dodgers lead in the ninth inning, you might see Clayton Kershaw come in.
That would be a dream.
Otherwise, what's the point of him being on this roster? He came in to get one out in the 18-inning affair.
Turns out it was a huge out.
It was a massive out, but it was out of necessity, not out of desire, you know, not out of strategy. And
that's what they said about Edgardo Rodriguez, dude. So
I know, but
back
what,
off.
What's the point of having him on the roster if it's not to get the final out in the World Series?
Look, I love that, Jess, but I do think I kind of see it a different way. And I would love for that to happen if the Dodgers are up big. That's what I want. That's my.
If it's 8-1, it's happening. I promise you. Yeah, I promise you it's happening.
I agree. But Jess, the way I see this game, I feel like it's going to be a tight one. It's going to come down to the final three outs.
I agree.
And I think that's why the Goto was pulled out in the sixth, they're going to give a little bit extra on Yamamoto to come out and close out game seven. He's been the best pitcher, bar none. And dude, we know that he can go 120 pitches. We know that he's ready to come back on no day's rest after a complete game in the fucking 18th, 19th inning. And I genuinely believe Jesse Rowe, the $325 million man, is slated to be your ninth inning closer if the Dodgers are up in a close game. You heard it here first on Deferred Collusion. Eat my shorts.
It's only going to be out of necessity if things are going wrong.
Oh, dude, I'm telling you.
I can't see it being the plan. I could see it happening out of necessity. 100%. I could see it.
This is why I disagree. You know, Dave's a gamesman, and you know he's not going with analytics anymore to get these big outs. He's going with the best arms he's got, and he sees his Buffalo, dude, his great white shark, his Yamamoto, only threw 96 bullets last night. That's nothing. That's a warm-up for the javelin Jamaican.
Jamaican? What?
Dude, he's Jamaican me crazy with what I think he can do on the mound.
Well, I think that the javelin is the key word here because he does have a very specific routine that he has to go through on days that he pitches. So if he's coming into the game, I kind of think it has to be like if he has like three innings of time for him to get his workout stuff going and stuff. So maybe he'll do some stuff before the game just to stay loose, just in case that happens. I would be absolute fucking cinema if it happened, but I don't think it's part of the plan. I think I think ideally their plan would be to have Snell, who would be on 2 days of rest, to come in and have a one inning at the end kind of deal, I think would be, or two innings even, would make the most sense.
I'm just saying, I think Dave allowed the room for this to be an option. You know what I mean? I really do. That's the only reason why I think you keep him out of the seventh and, you know, his pitch count under 100 is that, hey, we expect to win this game. And if I need my best pitcher in game seven, I need him available. And this is the best way. So
fair enough. Game seven is tonight. Give us your fan fiction as to how this game ends, and give us your best actual prediction as to how this game ends.
Man, as for the score, I'm gonna throw out, I think it's gonna be a 5-3 Dodgers victory. I think there's going to be some pressure in the ninth inning, and I think Yama's going to come out to close it. I really do.
So you're blending your fan fiction with your actual prediction.
I really do, because it's all fan fiction, Papacito. Yeah, that's true. But I really think that's in the cards, and just since I was fighting you so hard on it, I feel like I have to make it my prediction. But that's what I'm hoping hoping to see, but in my heart of hearts, I would love this to be like an 8-1 trouncing, and it's over early, and the Dodgers are World Series back-to-back champs. Jess, how about you? Final predictions. Give me your fan fiction on how this game ends. Give me your best actual prediction.
My fan fiction is that, like you mentioned, 8-1, 9-1 trouncing. Dud, no stress. Easy win for the Dodgers. Clayton Kershaw comes in, closes it out. That's my fan fiction. My actual prediction, close game. I'm going to say it's a little high scoring. 5-4 Dodgers. It's going to be clenched butt cheeks in the very end of the game. But I do think Blake Snell is going to close it out. That is my prediction for
Jesse. Toronto fans were lighting us up saying you can't spell Snell without two L's. Well, there ain't three, right?
That's true. That's true. I don't know. Maybe if not Snell, you know, maybe I can maybe see Yama, but yeah, I don't know.
The King will climb.
Maybe. I mean, Roki, maybe. Roki's only going one inning if he is. But I think we're going to see a heavy dose of starting
pitchers. I got a disgusting feeling that it's going to go extras.
Oh, God, don't do this to me, dude.
Dude, I don't want a lot. Yeah.
All right. Well, either way, we're going to find out. Game 7 is tonight. And I'm excited. I'm nervous. Yeah. I'm ready.
This is incredibly fun.
Get your popcorn ready. This has been Deferred Collusion. It's me, Jesse Rowe, King of Crespi, joined as always by Brandon Bullinger, Lord Paramount of the South Bay in Los Angeles, California. Brandon, I'm going to let you have the last word. Take it home, brother.
Woo! Jess, this has been a phenomenal November 1st episode of Deferred Collusion, a Game 7 special. For you, the valued viewer, it's us, your blue collar boys, and you know we love joining you. Hit us in the comments, let us know what you're feeling, what you're thinking.
It all starts with spring training.
It really does.
Fundamentals, but put in the work.
What a season it's been. Share it with your friends. We know we love to hear from you. Go Dodgers, baby. Let's see if we can go back to back, 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 back to. Back up.
Game 7.
Love you, Jess. This has been a blast, dude.
Game 7!